Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:41 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is November 7th. Well, I thought we'd kick off with an old familiar chart. So it's the total or the central bank balance sheets aggregated and redenominated into US dollars. So it's down about 4 trillion. And over the course of the last decade, every time it has just gone sideways to down a bit, then it has corresponded with significant stress in asset prices. So it went up a lot. I think it's very obvious that the move up in 2020 was extraordinary. And it went from 20 trillion to about 34 trillion in the space of little more than 18 months. And since then, it's been coming down. But a lot of the reason it's been coming down has been the strength of the dollar. So that's basically sucked liquidity out of the global market. And it's been one of the primary reasons why asset prices have been contracting globally, why emerging markets, despite the fact they have higher growth and not nearly as much in the way of debt issues as the rest of the world, but because of the strength of the dollar, it's made US dollar liabilities even more problematic. And that's been especially true for the Chinese property sector. And so this has been a significant issue. And of course, then for anyone who has been buying oil, well, the strength of the dollar has also been really problematic for them as well. So, not only has the size of the central bank balance sheet been going down globally, but the strength of the dollar has contributed to tightening liquidity on top of that. Now, I've been thinking a lot about this because the dollar index is looking susceptible to additional downside. And we've had three downside Q reversals since the end of September. And we had a jolly big downward dynamic on Friday and downside follow through in here today. And 110 is the lower side of the range, and we're at 110.1 right now. So there's certainly the potential that we're going to see additional downside or potentially a reversion back down towards the 200-day moving average. Now, this has been really a very consistent trend. So we have a sequence of ranges, one above the last, and each one has been able to sustain the breakout. So therefore, a midpoint danger line stop, I think to give it a little bit of room, somewhere around 107 would very clearly puncture the uptrend. But even then, a sustained move below the low that we had right at the end of October would probably be enough to stoke additional bullish interest, and particularly in assets that have been depressed as a result of the strength of the US dollar. Now, we'll come to some of those in a moment. But what I was also thinking about in here over the weekend is about global money supply. So obviously, the dollar and money supply are very much part of the same argument. There was a huge flood of new money created during the pandemic. It's not quite the same thing as talking about the quantity of debt, but they certainly created a lot of money and it flowed out into the global economy. And this chart aggregates the M2 money supply for most of the significant economies. And we can see also that in 2020, it went from 80 to 105 trillion in a really significantly short period of time, and now it's coming back down. It's down about 7 trillion this year, and it didn't peak until April. So not only do we have the value of assets that are sitting on central bank balance sheets deteriorating, but also the quantity of cash that's outstanding is contracting. So this is a causal factor as well behind the illiquidity that we're seeing in several asset classes. Now, the thing that I find most interesting at present is that we've had this huge move in the dollar, and we've had a very significant move in treasuries as well. So treasury yields are still pushing higher, and objectively, that makes sense because the Federal Reserve is still raising interest rates. And as long as they're raising interest rates, then the short end will continue to price that in, and eventually the long end will stop pricing it in because they'll be more worried about deflation than inflation. But this is still a consistent trend on the upside. But it was odd that bonds would sell off so aggressively, and yet the dollar was so very strong. And then we really should be thinking about why was the dollar so strong when you have this, and of course the answer is that investors were not all that worried about deficits, and they weren't all that worried about the quantity of dollars that had been printed during the pandemic because some of the issues in the rest of the world were worse. And of course, we have the war in Ukraine as being a clear example of that. So then there was a real willingness to simply look past some of the issues that the US has because they were worse everywhere else. But when bond yields are rising like this, then the logical explanation or the logical conclusion would be that the dollar should be weaker, and it hasn't been. So I was really starting to think about this or over the weekend. I was trying to figure out, well, why? What would be an indication that there was less demand for dollars, even with yields rising? So I was thinking then about FX reserves. And I went and I found a list of the biggest holders of US dollars in their foreign exchange reserves. So I took the top 10, and then I made sure that they were all reporting in the same denominations, because some were in billions and some were in millions, and I added them all together, and I came up with this chart. So what we can clearly see is that FX accumulation really peaked in 2014, and then subsequently pretty much went sideways, and it went up in 2021. So then it peaked at the beginning of this year. So despite the fact that the dollar has been rallying, the holdings of dollars in FX reserves have in fact been falling. Now, that's a reflection of countries selling dollars, buying their domestic currency to try and support their domestic currencies as a way of trying to control inflation. So, that has also represented a lot of supply for dollars, despite the fact that the dollar has been really very strong. So, then the question is, well, how long can that go on for when you can't have people selling almost $1 trillion without it having some sort of impact on the value of the currency. So then there is the potential here that what we're looking at is that the dollar will roll over and bond yields will continue to rise. And that is really problematic for the US government. Because when you've got a strong currency, then there will be flows. There will be people that will say, well, I'll buy those bonds because I'm getting the benefit both of the currency and then I get the higher interest rate. And especially when you're only buying for 6 months or a year. And we can just look at that yield curve because you can get 4% now for anything with a duration out to about 3 months. So 3 month money at 4% or 10 year money at 4.2%. Well, why not just take the 3 month money? But that's assuming that the dollar is stable. Now, if the dollar is falling at 4% every 3 months, well, then you're not making anything on a currency adjusted basis. And therefore, yields would have to rise. So there is the real possibility here that what we could be looking at first is an acceleration in the trend in government bond yields. That's going to put exceptional pressure on the housing market in the USA, because the 30-year mortgage is already in excess of 7%. So it's going to kill off demand for new houses. Now, that's going to create a deflationary shock. When deflation starts to take hold, then I think those higher yields on bonds will attract additional investors. We also have I think, very significant point that pension funds are overallocated to the alternatives sector. The value of alternatives has gone up. The value of their bond holdings has gone down. And then, as a reflection, as a weighting issue, then they won't be able to buy more alternatives, but they may have to buy more bonds when they start to reweight their portfolios for the new year. So there is the potential that yields go up first and subsequently come down. Then we have the big question about if the dollar is weaker, is that going to start to support commodities? And what would that mean for inflation? So oil prices today got up to test the $100 area and then didn't like it. So we might see some additional consolidation here. Then we still see this clear free-for-all environment in natural gas, where US prices were steadier in here today because of cold weather, and then weaker in Europe because of unseasonably warm weather. So prices came down. Gold, having popped on the upside on Friday, did not follow through on the upside in here today, but it didn't decline much either. Platinum did follow through on the upside, and it's now coming back up towards this $1,000 level. So this is now some of the first clear evidence of a return to demand dominance. It has now broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and it is back above the 200-day moving average. If it can push back above the 1,000-day, excuse me, the $1,000 level, then that's going to be welcome evidence of a return to demand dominance. So prices have been really ranging now for 6 years, and platinum, more than anything else, needed a new catalyst for demand. Well, issues with power in South Africa were one of the big catalysts for the surge we had a decade ago. But I think more important now is the use of platinum as a catalyst in the production of hydrogen. And the hydrogen economy is growing. And of course, we have now COP27 going on in Egypt. And you have countries committing to the idea that developed countries should foot the bill for dealing with climate issues in much of the developing world. And it's very easy for politicians to sit around and talk the talk. It's going to be for something else entirely to actually get their domestic populations to fess up the coin when living standards are declining and taxes have to be raised. And then carbon credits are starting to rebound from the lower side of the range, and they were in positive territory in here today. There's a lot of discussion going on right now about the climate, but one of the most important discussions is about greenwashing, where a company can buy carbon credits and then they'll say that they have achieved their climate goals, but they haven't actually stopped emitting at all, but rather they have simply ticked the boxes and spent the money. And That was good enough for most of the last decade. And now, with a more activist, or perhaps more accurately, fundamentalist environmental lobby, that's not going to be good enough any longer. But they don't really have solutions as to how on earth we're going to sustain our living standards and achieve their climate goals either. I think the only viable strategy, realistically, is to build more nuclear reactors. And the uranium ETF continues to firm from the lower side of this range. Now let's think about stock markets. So we have the potential that the dollar will ease. And we have bond yields that continue to march higher. So the discount rate is going to get progressively higher, and then corporate earnings aren't going to be able to thrive in that environment. But we are certainly looking at a less consistent downtrend. So we had the failed downside break below 3600, and the level has pushed up into the overhead trading range. Now, it has not yet sustained a move back above the 200-day moving average, and until it does that, I don't think we'll have clear confirmation that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term. But at least it is less consistent on the downside. Now, of course, we might yet see downside surprises because the economy will eventually slow. There's also a growing I think it's a willingness to accept that potentially there's going to be a soft landing. I think that it's very dangerous to bank on a soft landing. One thing that is going to contribute and continue to contribute to inflation is the lack of workers, and that's going to put upward pressure on wages. So we might see a trend of automation over the next decade, but that's not going to bring down inflation in the short term. And I think this is something that's likely to come back into focus. But we are now in at the end of the first week of November, and this is the time of the year when people really do want to rescue their performance. So money will get put to work over the next 7 weeks in order to boost some returns. And I suspect that it's going to be international markets do better if the dollar rolls over. We can see very clearly here on the nominal performance and currency adjusted performance that the FTSE, for example, is down 1% in nominal terms and nearly 16% in currency adjusted terms, or Germany 8% versus 19%. So if the dollar does roll over, if the euro does do better, then that will result in money flowing back into Europe, and the euro is back above 110, excuse me, one, and then the pound is back above 115. So this is looking like more encouraging action. It's not necessarily the fact that Europe has suddenly become so much better, but rather that there are challenges that the US faces. And of course, there's a lot of speculation about what's going to happen with the midterm elections. But one thing that markets like is a locked parliament, so that there will be a lame duck presidency and big spending bills will be curtailed, and that's probably beneficial. So I think we're at a very interesting juncture here in the markets. We might yet see a rebound, and I haven't closed my short positions, but I'm not going to burn for the faith either. And if I see that we start getting higher reaction lows and we get a higher high on some of these major Wall Street indices, well, might be encouraged to just simply go along for a while, but I'm not quite there yet. I'm also very alert to the fact that Bitcoin isn't rallying. and it was back below the 21,000 level in here today. It's a liquidity barometer. So we still have tight liquidity. We have central bank balance sheets that are contracting. We have money supply growth globally negative. And then we have the dollar that's breaking lower. This isn't especially good news. But we've certainly seen that investors are still willing to buy the dip and eager to buy the dip, particularly in China. So the H-share index was up another 150 points in here today. And there's the potential that we'll see an unwinding of the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. And that would take the index back up another 1,000 points. And it is bouncing from the region of the 2008 lows. So even in a bear market scenario, there's still potential for a reversionary rally. I don't buy into the fact to the contention that China is about to abandon its COVID zero policy, not with the number of cases continuing to rise. And they've got such a large population and so few people have a natural immunity that we're likely to be in this sort of on again, off again environment for the lengthy medium term. But that doesn't mean that the stock market can't unwind the short term overbought, oversold condition. And India was in positive territory today. So now it's pushing up to a new recovery high. And if the dollar rolls over, then that is likely to be beneficial for India. And not least, then it should help to also burnish the outlook for emerging markets more generally. I think India is the country that's most likely to benefit from the geopolitical tensions internationally, and that's likely to be the case for the next decade. And this is really quite significant relative strength that we're seeing from the Indian market right now. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.